The Lord be with you.
And with your
spirit. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. But early in the morning, he arrived again in the temple area. And all the people started coming to him. And he sat down and taught them. Then the scribes and Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery and made her stand in the middle. They said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. Now in the law, Moses commands us to stone such a woman. So what do you say?" They said this to test him, so that they could have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and began to write on the ground with his fingers. But when they continued asking him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let the one among you who is without sin be the first to cast the first stone at her." Again he bent down and wrote on the ground. And in response, they went away one by one, beginning with the elders. So he was left alone with the woman before him. Then Jesus straightened up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She replied, "No one, sir." Then Jesus says, "Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, do not sin anymore." The Gospel of the Lord.
All three readings today look forward. All are about fresh beginnings, about not becoming imprisoned in our past. When we study classic philosophy like Plato and Aristotle, we're concerned with the being of things, substance and existence. What are things? But biblical religion is much more interested in the future of things, of what things will be, what they will become under the influence of God. We have a God who makes all things new, and in that we find hope. The first reading from Isaiah was written at the time of the return of the Israelite exiles from their captivity in Babylon. This was the worst trauma in Jewish history. It was blamed by the prophets, quite rightly, on their sin. Because of the sin of the people, Jerusalem was destroyed. The temple burned down. The people carried off into exile. It was as though God had abandoned his people. And they interpreted what happened as due to their sin. But now, through the ministrations of a new guy on the scene named Cyrus, who was the king of Persia, he had conquered the Babylonians, thereby sort of inheriting the Israelite slaves. Through him, God is doing something new. "Remember not the events of the past, things of long ago consider not. See, I am doing something new." What he's doing is akin to what he did with Israelite slaves in Egypt. He's bringing his people back to freedom. And then it goes on to talk about how God is providing a way for the Israelites to return, a road, water, and so forth. God does not want his people in permanent exile. That's the point. He doesn't want them languishing forever in their sin. Now, is the Bible clear about sin? Yes, it knows all about it. Does it know about God's punishment of sin? Yes, which means God allowing us to feel the effects of our sin. But God is not interested in leaving us stuck in our sin. He is a saving God, a liberating God, making a way in the desert. And then we have the gospel for today, the story of the woman caught in adultery. Notice first how this woman is brought right into the temple precincts by pious people, the leaders of the people. Now, this is the most sacred place in the Jewish religion. Well, in ancient times and today, some religious people want to trap others in their past. Precisely, religious people sometimes want to nail others to the cross of the mistakes they have made. This is using religion itself, which is meant to be a power of liberation, as a means to effect imprisonment. Paul saw this with great clarity. That's why he said, the law, if followed with the wrong attitude, can lead us into sin. The people who bring her to Jesus say that she was caught in the very act of adultery. It makes me wonder how they found that out. I mean, was this some sort of sting operation they had set up for her? And then they invoke Moses in order to condemn her to death by stoning. This is using religion as a blunt object rather than as a means of salvation. Religion tying us to our past rather than liberating us for the future. And then Jesus uses one of the great one-liners in the Bible. Let the one among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. Luckily, Mary was not in that crowd. What he's driving at is that every one of us is a sinner. We all stand in need of forgiveness, and in that way, we are all in the same boat. And being in this condition ought to awaken in us a compassion for each other. It shouldn't prompt an attack mode. It should prompt remembrance of our own sin and then compassion. When he's left alone with the woman, all that is left, as St. Augustine noted in his commentary on this very passage, is misery and mercy. The misery of the sinner and the mercy of Christ. And then he says, go and do not sin again. How rich that little word is, go. What's being emphasized once again is not the past, but the future. Straining on to what lies ahead, following the upward calling in Christ, not obsessing with what lies behind. Go forward. Now, this is not some sort of bland anything goes type of thing. He says, go and stop sinning. But he says, go. There's a forward-looking quality to this whole thing. And perhaps it would be good for us to meditate on this. I would be willing to bet that many of us feel terribly imprisoned by something from our past. We've done something terrible, maybe something deeply shameful. Every time we think of it, we cringe. Who knows? Maybe it's an act of injustice, an act of cruelty, an act of violence, some sexual dysfunction. Or perhaps someone has harmed us so severely that we just can't let go of the hurt. And we continue to seethe with resentment. When we see the person who hurt us, we can't help but hate him or her. Any attempt at reconciliation is met with roadblocks and frustration. Perhaps we feel that in the past we have done something so bad that even God can't forgive us. We don't even bother going to confession because we're just too ashamed. We're so convinced that God would not forgive us. Like ancient Israel, we feel like we're in prison and in exile. Like the woman caught in adultery, we've committed some sin that we just feel imprisoned, caught by. And we feel that if everyone knew about it, they would drag us out in public and humiliate us. What I want you to know is this. There is a way out of that. There is a path forward. There is an opening in the desert. You might be misery like the woman in the gospel. But standing right in front of you, there is mercy. The forgiveness offered in Christ. Remember, every saint had a past, and some of them were juicy. But every sinner who turns to Christ has a future.